I'll send out probably an email just to remind you on Wednesday night so you don't forget as we pray together. I have talked to a couple of teachers this week, and I was thinking about how every week, there was another murder shooting this weekend, and I was watching that story, and it's hard not to just grow, just kind of cold toward things when you live in such a volatile world. And in fact, it says somewhere in the Bible that many people's love will wax cold. It will, just kind of wax over like a coat of wax on the outside of it. And it's really incumbent upon us to not just kind of get sucked into, when I started getting pumped up about the fear of the storm heading for Florida and thinking about Diane's mom, I was just sitting there, I was praying, and I was going, I just put my hands up and I thought, God, just take that storm and just move it up. This is like 3 days ago. Just move it up the coast. They do that. I mean, it's not like it was supernatural, but instead of succumbing to fear, we're supposed to do the opposite of that. We're supposed to be courageous who has any control over a hurricane? Well, the answer to that is only God does. There's nobody else who has control over it. So who can I consult about things like that? And what can I do about crazy people that shoot other people or do the things that they do? I can't do anything about that. All I can do is believe and trust that God is over all. But I can also not wax cold and watch my heart. And I'm particularly watching this with some of my younger grandkids, seeing they're not here, I can talk about them. But, I'm just watching, Generation Z or whatever they're calling it now, and how big their world is and how small it is at the same time. Because it's all oriented toward a lot of secondhand information, a lot of secondhand relationships. And I was thinking about how easy it is for our emotions to grow cold to what's happening around us because we can't do anything about the big things. But anyway, I just thought about that, and that's the environment that our kids are in. And, you could start making a list of things that they're experiencing that I never had to experience or that my children never had to experience. So it's pretty broad and it's pretty vast. And so to pray for our teachers and to pray for people in our community, I think is incredibly important. So thanks for that reminder, Daniel. Awesome. I think we're all going to feel a little bit better now. Also, you saw in the chart of things, we're taking a look at just where we've been over the last number of years and where we're going. And I was thinking about how many great teachers we've had over the years that have taken care of the kids, and then having all these meetings with class groups of people and teams of people. We kind of switched to teams a few years ago. We've got a great group of experienced teachers that are kind of coming in and helping with the connections with kids and connections with families. So I'm really excited about these classes coming up because I feel like they've always gotten good attention. Now they're kind of getting a more woven connection with all the things that we're doing. So families being in community, that's a part of teaching kids. When my kids were growing up, I never thought it was the Sunday school teacher's jobs to teach my kids. I just looked at that as another opportunity for them to be exposed to people who had the same belief system but have different perspectives. So that's what we're talking about. So you can be praying about that right along with us. And then also fathers and sons. And I was going through one of the passages that I'm so familiar with in Deuteronomy 6, Hear, O hear Israel, the Lord our God, He is one. And I was going through it, and it just kind of makes me shudder for young men. And I'm looking at the young men sitting here that have kids and don't have kids, and I'm thinking about just how tough it is to speak of God when you walk in the way, when you rise up, when you lie down. And that's what being a dad has been about for me. And I had, lunch with two of my sons this week, and we were talking about being men of God, in the context of what their lives were like. And so that continues for me, even though they don't always go camping with me to campouts or whatever. So those connections, those father-son connections, and maybe they're a little bit more accentuated for me because I experienced things with my sons that I never experienced with my father. And that was because of a lot of the choices that I made. And now that my father is gone, I'm starting to realize what that feels like to have generations before you be gone, and then like you're the man. You know, you're the one. You're the one who is going to pray for your family. So I just want to encourage you with that, dads, that don't be passive when it comes to being a father. Because everything in this world is anesthetizing us to our emotions and wants to make us passive in the midst of our busyness, in the midst of our preoccupation. But the picture that's painted here in Deuteronomy is one of shepherding and of fulfilling the whole deal. Like right now, living for me strategically with my grandsons and my granddaughter, figuring out what kind of things that I have to contribute, which are totally different than when I was a father, it's still a passion for me because fathers and sons are such a big part of what makes the world go round. So we're not going to just have a father-son camp out, which we will, and if you want to come to that, great. But we're also going to be just thinking about that whole idea, not just for our body, and the people that we know, but also for our city. Because one of the number one things that the millennials are running into is the lack of fathering from their fathers. You hear this in studies and you see it in conversations, and it's kind of becoming a lost art. Hopefully moms will hold on a lot longer than I'm assuming they will. They're so tenacious. Today we're talking about Jesus and forever. And I've got a number of passages I'm interested in going through, but I thought it would be nice for you to paint a picture for me of forever. Now, I'm not talking about heaven, okay? I get that. We've talked about heaven some, but when the word forever comes to your mind, what are the attributes and what are the things that come to your mind when you think of forever? Like a couple of words or a picture or whatever. Yeah.
You know, she will be free from that body of flesh and forever will experience, you know, the same joy.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's a lot of hope in forever, isn't there? There's a lot of hope in the things that don't work here the way you wish they would work, and forever is a part of things being made right. So that's one aspect. Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm talking about. Chad? Yeah.
For me, like, oh, I'm not going to live here. I will live on. What does that mean for what time? What am I going to do until that time? Up to that time? What's that look like?
Yeah.
Yeah,
so the relationship between here and forever, there's a lot of unknown in that. So we have confidence that there's a forever, but there's not a whole lot that we know about forever and all of the different attributes of it. Brandon?
Mm-hmm. And yet still, like, the repetition, no matter how many times it did, everyone got to enjoy the glory of the morning.
Yeah.
And how that it's not going to stop until God says stop.
Yeah. Yeah, and what are the glories of heaven and of eternity? What are they going to be? What's that going to look like? Because we have a picture of that anticipation. I mean, I don't love every sunset, but I certainly see my share of ones that take my breath away. So, you know, that's obviously a picture of things that are going to happen in heaven. Dean?
I just think about how everything in our lives is marked by time. And we go from one event to another, and it's separated by time, and every, you know, our days, we think about how much time we're going to spend doing something. And so when we think about forever, we're thinking about that. We're thinking about the passing of time. But I just don't think it's going to feel the same. That with that aspect being gone, we're just not going to, we won't be bottled by that. We think about, you know, when we think about forever, we think, boy, that's a long time. But I think that when we're experiencing that, it's not going to be the linear way that we live our lives now. And think about the verse where it says that to God, a day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is like a day. It accentuates that. It's a totally different thing. And as long as we're here, we're going to think about forever being a long time. But I think being in it, we're not going to feel that. And we're going to we're going to be able to enjoy moments. I know one thing that Diane would talk about, when she sees something beautiful, there's almost a pain to it because you know that
it's going to go away.
You see it then, it's going to go, but it's going to be gone. And you can never get that back again. I think being in eternity, it's going to be different. Though they won't be moments. It'll be a different experience.
Yeah. In fact, while you were thinking, I had this picture in my mind of a key going into a lock and of a door being opened up to a totally different reality, you know, on so many different levels. But just how expansive it will be when we walk through that door. Delaine.
God is love, and so it doesn't matter if someone's passed away or someone hates you, family member wise, you love them anyway. So I think love is
true. Yeah, and especially in an environment where there'll be no more tears, so things that we've experienced here are going to change. Andre. This is a great conversation to have with your kids, you know, with your teenagers, just to sit around and or younger kids and have the conversation. So, Sarah, I told you it was a good idea for me to take this book up here. This is called The Armor of God, and would you just stand up and tell us what we're going to do?
Amount of time, it's easy to commit to that. So if you're interested, just let me or Jessica know, and start in a couple weeks.
Awesome. Well, thank you for doing that. Well, last week we talked about Jesus and death, and so we ended up in Corinthians, and I ended up there again in the same chapter this week because talking about Jesus and forever led me there. So let's look over at 1 Corinthians 15, but a different passage. I mean, kind of right in the middle of the parenthetical passages that we looked at last week, as we think about forever, and I put this at the top, why is forever important to experiencing hope? Because forever is a part of us having hope now, okay? So they're like tied into each other. They're inseparable. And so thank you for those insights or whatever, and I'm sure you have your own insights into that because they're so tied together. Chapter 15, verse 12, begins to talk about this idea of our connection with forever and why it's important. Now, if Christ has preached that he's been raised from the dead, how do some among you say that there is no resurrection of the dead? So, what does that tell you? That tells you at the time of Paul, there were already people who were saying, resurrection from the dead. What a bunch of baloney, okay? So, there were other people teaching things differently than the apostles were teaching. But if there is no resurrection of the dead, not even Christ has been raised. And if Christ has not been raised, then our preaching is in vain, and your faith then is also in vain. Moreover, we are even found to be false witnesses of God because we testified against God that he raised Christ, because we saw it and we testified about it, whom he did not raise, if in fact the dead are not raised. For if the dead are not raised, so this is kind of like that key into the door that gets you into that whole experience of forever life. If the dead are not raised, even not even Christ has been raised. And if Christ has not been raised, verse 17, your faith is worthless. You're still locked and lost in your sins. Then those who have fallen asleep in Jesus have perished. And if we have hoped in Christ in this life only, we are of all men to be most pitied. Why is that? Because if there is no eternity, if there is no forever life, then our choices that we've made here to honor God based on what his word says to us become absolutely worthless. It says this really clearly in another passage where he says, then why not eat, drink, and be merry? For tomorrow you die. Just think about how many people are wrestling with the whole issue of life and death. And that's their conclusion. They join this group that were at the time of Paul, and they're going, that is so far-fetched. How can I even begin to believe it? So I'm going to eat, I'm going to drink, and I'm going to be merry, because tomorrow it's not going to matter anyway. So it's just the resurrection is of an incredible value. So consequently, forever is of an incredible value. And how do you deal with that? I was thinking about this when we were worshiping, and I was kind of watching. One of the nice things about being in a circle is, you know, when anybody gets distracting to me, I just close my eyes, you know, because I used to have to stand up here and do that, you know. To see faces and to see families interacting and seeing people together, as you look at that, you have an insight into what they're experiencing together. Now, I don't care if everybody goes like this. You know, I'm kind of prone to that. I think I'm going to be in some kind of quasi-charismatic group when I get to heaven. And I don't care if people go like this. And I don't care if people go like this. I don't care if people go like this. It doesn't matter to me. But I was thinking, it is so important to be emotionally connected and engaged with God, isn't it? And to know how that connection happens, particularly in relationship to forever, is really important. And in order to be connected emotionally, I have to use my brain, I have to use my heart, and I have to put those things together and bring them into my experience. So for me, the Bible is constantly rediscovering my emotional connection with what's true. Now, I realize this is dangerous because evangelicals, don't we have the train thing we were taught about? You know, that emotion has to be on the end. It goes fact and faith, fact and feelings. You know, feelings are at the end, they're the caboose, you know. So I get it that I'm on really shaky ground. But the connection that you have with some of the things that we talk about on a consistent basis is absolutely incredible and miraculous. And when it comes to forever, that's true. And that's why Paul is saying, don't forget about the incredible value that this has to you. This is a personal thing. This is a personal value to you specifically. So that was one thing I thought about why is forever important to experiencing hope? Well, it's my emotional connection with the fact that all of this is going to pass away. And behold, all things are going to become new. Which led me to a second passage, and if you turn over to Hebrews chapter 11, it's right before the book of Jim. Hebrews 11, verse 39. And this is at the end of the conversation about the men and women of faith. All these, having gained approval through their faith, didn't receive what was promised. Now catch this. Because God had provided something better for us so that apart from us, they could not be made perfect. So this gives me an image. You know, here we are headed toward forever. All of these really super cool things have happened. If you look at Noah and Adam and Abraham and Joseph and Paul and Peter and James and John. But those were only like the tip of the iceberg. Those things are not going to be fully known and fully understood apart from us. And so that apart from us being joined in this miraculous story that's leading us to forever, the story wasn't full. How many people do you think have lived since the time that Paul wrote these words? Yeah, a lot of people. A lot of people. How many people of those billions of people, how many of them have come into the kingdom? As many as God called to himself. It doesn't matter what country, it doesn't matter what culture, it doesn't matter where you live. God is doing the work of calling souls to himself. All to be joined together so that this forever is not like some little group of Jews and some little group of Christians. That was the whole point in the gospel going to the Gentiles when it did. Because every nation under heaven is going to be represented in this forever. And that certainly had some ultimate diversity to things, doesn't it? Won't that be a diverse place when we get, you know, just another one of the copies that we make of things that God has said will be a certain way. So, we escape futility. What a wonderful thing. Not only does forever have a great value to us, we escape the futility of only living on this earth and experiencing what we experience here and then ending up in a box in the ground, turning into dust. How incredible is it? How many people will never get in a connection with the reality of that and will die in futility? Which led me back to 1 Corinthians 2. Kind of a cheery little conversation, isn't it, today? Like I told you last week, you know, I had the choice to be a motivational speaker or a truth teller. And so I decided to be a truth teller. You know, maybe in heaven I'll get to be a motivational speaker. I'm sure it won't be very necessary. 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 6. We're not speaking a wisdom among those who are, we do speak a wisdom among those who are mature. A wisdom, however, not of this age, nor of the rulers of this age who are passing away. So our wisdom doesn't fit in. I heard somebody commenting from Hollywood today on some big plan or whatever. I'm thinking, dumb as a rock. I mean, you know, from any kind of perspective at all. And you listen to people in politics and you go, wait a minute. Wait a minute, our solutions are not political. That's why they sound so empty all the time when people are talking. We don't speak wisdom among those who are mature. We do among those who are mature. A wisdom, however, not of this age nor of the rulers of this age, they are passing away. all that wisdom is dissipating. But there is a kind of wisdom that's going to remain, and that's the wisdom that you and I have. But we speak God's wisdom in a mystery, the hidden wisdom which God predestined before the ages to our glory. This is the wisdom that belongs to you. The wisdom of the world is available to you, but this belongs to you. This is what it means to live in real wisdom. The wisdom which none of the rulers of this age has understood, for if they had understood it, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. But just as it is written, and for the life of me, I can't figure out where this is written. It's an Old Testament quote. I go over to Isaiah and I look at it and I go, I don't know. This isn't making sense to me. But I believe it because it's in capital letters. Things which eye has not seen and ear has not heard and which have not entered the heart of man. So these are things that men don't even think about. We don't even contemplate these things because they are from a different realm. They are from a different reality. All that God has prepared for those who love him. And it's interesting. Then he says, for to us, God revealed those things through the Spirit. For the Spirit searches all things and even the depths of God. And then he goes into this conversation about it. You know, I forget who I am. I forget who I'm connected to. I forget what it means to be a victorious son or daughter of the living God. And that's what these passages are talking about. So incredible value, escape from futility, and I can live in a wisdom that is not going to pass away. You talk about things that you're going to take to heaven with you, you know, and none of your stuff is going to go with you. But the wisdom of God, as it has come about in your life, you are taking it with you because it comes from God and it goes back to God. Well, that made me think about Revelation 22. And, you know, this is a passage we pomp on many times because it has so much to do with our kind of entrance into the door of what forever is going to look like. And we have such limited data. I mean, I've read quite a few books on heaven, and some of them excite me, and some of them make me go, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that I can see that. But I do know that I like to use the term, it will be beyond my wildest imaginations. Revelation 22, verse 12. And I'm talking about this because Bernie and I have been wrestling with this idea of reward. You know, as a good evangelical, you know, the gift that comes from God is a free gift, right? I can't do anything to earn it at all. And so I have a tendency to kind of put that on everything that I do with my life. Well, it's, how can I boast in anything? And that's right. I shouldn't be boasting in anything. Even my good works, right? Aren't they foreordained by God so that I can walk in them? But there is the concept in the scriptures of how we live our lives and what it has to do with reward. Peter calls this abundant entrance. It's the difference between getting in kind of by the skin of your teeth. You know, he himself shall be saved, yet as through fire, like it talks about in Corinthians, or the idea that you would come abundantly, fully, richly into this eternal kingdom that's being talked about here. Verse 12, behold, I am coming quickly. My reward is with me. So he's bringing the reward, and he's going to render to every man according to what he has done. So I'd like to challenge you today and think about the way you have lived your life and the way you are living your life as being connected with what is going to happen when you enter into heaven. And I've always resisted this idea because it's kind of like, you know, patting people on the back or something. Or, you know, I'm going to be here, he's going to be here, she's going to be here, you know, comparing ourselves with ourselves. But that's not what we're doing here. We're comparing ourselves with his reward. And he's bringing his reward with him. And I'm going to render to every man according to what he has done. I am the beginning and the end, the first and the last. Blessed are those who wash their robes so that they may have the right to the tree of life and may enter by the gates into the city. Outside are the dogs and the sorcerers and the immoral persons and the murderers and the idolaters and everyone who loves and practices lying. So there is a difference in the people who enter and the people who don't enter. And I think based on the reward, and we're not going to talk about that a lot today, but I want to plant that thought in your mind to think about it. You know, what's that going to look like for you? Because heaven is going to be very communal. It's going to be very God-centered, but it's also going to be very, very, very personal. I mean, I don't know what your plan is for when you, when your eyes open up and you're in heaven. I think one of the first things I'm going to think about is, where's my wife? Where's my wife? You know, I know she left after me. At least that's what I'm hoping for. But where's my wife? You know, if I'm able to think in those terms, where are my friends? Where are my kids? Where are my grandkids? What's that process of discovery of abundant entrance going to look like for us when all things are made new? So we're going to share in Christ's reward, and that's a part of, you know, eternity. You know, 10 cities, 5 cities, you know, all of the different, what's that going to look like? There are going to be cities. There are going to be souls. There are going to be people. What's that going to look like? I'm excited. Which kind of led me to my final thought, which is over in Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews 10, 36. Andy is looking for a page rustling app for me so that whenever I go here, because so many people are on their phones now, there's no page rustling. So we're just going to have that built right in. I'm going to be able to hit a key and the page rustling will happen. And it'll just make me, I just have to get through for another 20 years, you know. So we're going to have to figure stuff like this. Hebrews 10, verse 36. Yeah, let's start with verse 35. This is such a cool passage because he's talking about a group of people who have lived it. You know, I heard a speaker say this week that if you think everything's going great in the world for everybody like it is going for us here, then you don't know what's going on in the world. I thought that was really thought-provoking. And so he's talking about their life, verse 32. Remember the former days when after being enlightened, you endured great conflict of sufferings. So the enlightening apparently didn't get them away from the sufferings. Partly of being made a public spectacle through reproaches and tribulation, and partly by becoming sharers with those who were so treated. For so you showed sympathy to the prisoners and accepted joyfully the seizure of your property, knowing that you have for yourselves a better possession and a lasting one. So, the people he's writing to have had some tough times, right? Tougher than my times? Yeah, I probably think so. Nobody seized my property. Nobody's made a public spectacle of me. And yet that's happening in the world right now. And it has been happening. Therefore, don't throw away your confidence. Because your confidence has a great reward. Have you ever run into another believer that has just basically given up? And they've thrown away their confidence because this happened, and God let them down. You know, and I'll tell you, my first feeling is I can relate. I can empathize with why they feel the way that they do because life is hard. But we're not supposed to throw away our confidence, which has a great reward. For we have need of endurance so that when we have done the will of God, we may receive what is promised. For yet in a little while, he who is coming will come, and he is not going to delay. But my righteous one shall live by faith, and if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. But we are not of those who shrink back to destruction, but of those who have faith to the preserving of the soul. And he's not just talking about preserving your soul here. He's talking about how that ties in to what is to come. in our forever life. A physical heaven is a theological and hopeful necessity. It's one of the reasons why some of the other religions let me down. I don't want to be a part of some cosmic light that all joins together at the end. I don't see God being that way. I don't see God as having explained the world that way. So just something to think about. That was actually kind of our, we did a series of summer things about Jesus. I don't know if you noticed that. Jesus and bread, Jesus and water. Jesus and death, and so that was the finale.